This story is really a microcosm of a bigger challenge that we have in Alaska.
The family of a missing Indigenous woman believed to be a homicide victim searches for answers. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, September 9th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a Louisiana man is dead after a helicopter crash near King Salmon.
One was trapped in the wreckage and remained underwater. And that was the one that sustained fatal injury.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly. A man from Louisiana was killed in a helicopter crash near King Salmon over the weekend. Authorities say the Bell 206B helicopter operated by Egley Air Hall departed from King Salmon at 9:18 a.m. Saturday with the pilot and four passengers aboard. The pilot was bringing the passengers to a fishing site when they crashed into Naknek River, about a quarter mile south of the King Salmon Airport. According to Alaska State Troopers, EMS and Good Samaritans in the area were able to pull the pilot and three passengers out of the water before troopers arrived. One passenger, 73-year-old Martin DeLoriel, died in the crash. Clint Johnson, Alaska chief of the National Transportation Safety Board, says the four people rescued were okay, but DeLoriel became trapped inside the helicopter when it went down.
The folks sustained minor injuries, but unfortunately one was trapped in the wreckage and remained underwater. And that was the one that sustained fatal injury.
According to NOLA.com, DeLoriel was a retired businessman and civic leader in New Orleans who was in Alaska on a fishing trip with friends. Johnson says what caused the crash remains under investigation.
We look at three main areas: man, machine, environment. Man being the human portion, the human performance; machine being the mechanical; and environment being, in this case, weather. All of those things are on the table. No conclusions have been drawn, and NTSB is investigating, and we plan on continuing that investigation.
Johnson says a recovery team will remove the helicopter from the river so investigators can examine it. A meteorologist has also been assigned to work alongside investigators to determine if weather conditions played a role in the crash. A judge sentenced Brian Smith in July to 226 years in prison for murdering two Alaska Native women, Kathleen Jo Henry and Veronica Bauchuk. But Smith was never charged in the death of a third woman, whose photos police found on one of his cell phones. Prosecutors said they could neither confirm her identity nor prove he killed her, but her family says otherwise. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, they were in court last week to get a death certificate and find answers. And a quick warning, listeners may find some details in this story troubling.
Presumptive death hearings don't usually pack a courtroom with TV cameras rolling, but this case involves Brian Smith, convicted in what the national media dubbed the memory card murders because of the two killings he recorded on cell phones. In the courtroom, poster-sized photos were on display, images of another woman, also found on one of Smith's cell phones, bloody, battered, and lifeless. When police confronted Smith about the pictures after his arrest 5 years ago, he told them she was alive, but had passed out on the ground from alcohol. That woman, Nick Pestrikoff says, is his cousin, Cassandra Boskovsky.
I've known her since she was born. She didn't have a stable home. Her dad liked his liquor, and so did her mother.
Pestrikoff says Cassandra had the same struggle.
She did. She had it rough, but she still had the capacity to love.
Love that endured inside his huge extended family, despite her chaotic life on the streets.
She dearly loved me, and I dearly loved her.
And it is out of that love the family petitioned the court to grant a death certificate to end the limbo and begin to heal.
The presumptive death hearing is a court hearing which is held when a person has disappeared.
District Judge Brian Clark told the courtroom the hearing is like a trial, only there are no attorneys. Instead, the family must present evidence to a jury of six people who have one question to answer.
Has sufficient evidence been presented from which it fairly may be presumed that the missing person has met death?
Truth is what the family hoped the trial would bring to light. They believe Anchorage police have not been entirely honest with them. But now they have a chance to demand answers. Another of Cassandra's cousins, Marcella Boskovsky Grounds, called her first witness, the lead investigator into the Smith murder case, Detective Brendan Lee.
Detective Lee, is that Brian Stevens Smith's foot in them photographs?
Detective Lee said a search of Smith's house turned up shoes that matched the one in the photo from his cell.
We believe that to be his foot in the photos, yes.
Detective Lee said police retrieved the images from Smith's cell phone in October of 2019, and not long afterwards shared them widely with other law enforcement agencies and shelters. An Anchorage Safety Patrol officer told them the pictures looked like Cassandra Boskovsky, a 38-year-old woman they encountered on a regular basis. Detective Lee then contacted the family, but didn't tell them about the photos. One of the lingering questions for the family, why weren't they shown the photos 5 years ago?
This story is really a microcosm of a bigger challenge that we have in Alaska.
Michael Livingston is a retired police officer and a missing and murdered Indigenous peoples activist. He says APD's treatment of the Boskovsky family should raise a lot of questions.
We're wondering why it's the policy of the Anchorage Police Department to not reach out to the families and say, could this possibly be your daughter?
In the case of Cassandra Boskovsky, the jury provided some relief.
We, the jury, unanimously find that there is sufficient evidence from which it may be fairly presumed that the above-named person has met death.
After the verdict, a wave of tears and anguish rolled over the room. But Terry Boskovsky says she's glad her family went through this process to bring closure.
Hope it helps a lot of other people that are missing their family members, like we are.
Boskovsky says the last anyone had heard from her niece was on September 18, 2019, when Cassandra called to wish her a happy birthday.
Nobody heard from her since. Not one of us.
And while the word missing once left room for hope, Boskovsky says it has left the family in a state of paralysis. She says she's grateful the jury also declared Cassandra's death a homicide and hopes it will encourage police to look for her remains so the family can bring Cassandra home. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
New policies aimed at addressing missing or murdered Indigenous persons, or MMIP, will soon be enacted statewide. That's after Governor Mike Dunleavy signed the legislation into law last week. The bill expands resources and training for police forces across the state and is drawing praise from a longtime MMIP advocate. KNOM's Ben Townsend has more.
The legislation establishes a new MMIP Review Commission, a 9-member body responsible for reviewing unsolved MMIP cases and submitting reports to the Alaska Legislature. The commission includes seats for representatives from victim advocacy and Alaska Native tribal organizations. Deila Johnson, an advocate and organizer with the Village of Solomon, said the creation of the commission is a much-needed step toward addressing the crisis.
At the state level, there was just not a lot of discussion or acknowledgement in addressing any of the overwhelming statistics surrounding the issues facing Indigenous populations, specifically women and young girls.
The bill also mandates Indigenous cultural training for new police officers in Alaska. The training will be especially impactful in rural communities like Nome, where the police department recruits officers that only live in the community while serving their 2-week rotations. Johnson believes the cultural training will help officers deepen their understanding of the people that they serve.
You know, they're on and off without any real sensitive training to the people that they're protecting, understanding, and needing to work into the different culture and lifestyles of the people.
The bill also requires the Department of Public Safety to file a missing persons report to the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System. They need to do so within 60 days of a report being filed at the local level. The DPS will also employ at least 2 full-time MMIP investigators. While Johnson acknowledges the bill is a step in the right direction, she hopes that the momentum won't stop here.
I really would hope that this is going to continue to generate the awareness surrounding these issues, keep the conversation going, and allow for additional partners, like potential partners, to jump in and build additional resources.
The new law will take effect on January 1st, 2025. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Sitka residents team up to help staff local libraries.
Libraries represent the freedom to read, no matter whether you have the funds to buy a book or not.
That's ahead. Stay with us. An Akiak man has been charged with multiple felony counts of animal cruelty for allegedly beating seven dogs to death after a family dispute. 23-year-old Charles Ivan faces charges of felony burglary, nine felony counts of cruelty to animals, and multiple misdemeanor theft-related counts, all stemming from an alleged dispute the night of September 1st. Alaska State Troopers allege that over the course of the dispute, which happened at multiple family residences, Ivan damaged electronics and stole tobacco and rolling papers. According to a trooper's statement, he then allegedly walked to his father's dog yard, removed nine sled dogs from their tethers, chained them by the necks, and used a stick to beat them to death. Charging documents state a witness was able to intervene and save two of the nine dogs. According to court documents, Ivan intends to represent himself. As of September 5th, he was in custody at the Yukon-Kuskokwim Correctional Center in Bethel, with bail set at $20,000. His next court date is a representation hearing scheduled for Wednesday in Bethel Court. Three Anchorage pedestrians have been struck and killed in separate collisions since yesterday, one of which closed the Seward Highway this morning. Police say a minivan struck a woman on the Seward Highway about 7 miles south of Potter Marsh at about 6 a.m. today. The woman died at the scene and the highway was closed for more than 2 hours. That collision came after two adults were fatally struck Sunday morning by pickup trucks on Muldoon Road near East 6th Avenue and DeBar Road near Burgaw Street. Police say both people were crossing outside a crosswalk when they were hit. All three drivers in those collisions remained at the scene, according to police. No charges have been filed and none of the victims have been named as police notify their families. Police say a fourth woman suffered non-life-threatening injuries after she was struck by a school bus just before 10 a.m. today near Spinard Road and Minnesota Drive. Anchorage School District officials say no students were riding that bus at the time. The Juneau Police Department announced Friday that it will release the body camera footage from a deadly July shooting this week. That should come at the same time as the Alaska Office of Special Prosecutions delivers its findings from the investigation into the incident. It's been nearly 2 months since officers shot and killed Stephen Kissack, a man who lived on the streets downtown. Police say Kissack lunged at officers while holding a knife and made violent threats during the confrontation on a busy downtown street. Juneau police had not previously given a date when they would make the body camera footage public. Then, on Friday, the police department said it would release the footage later in the day. But City Attorney Emily Wright says the city then learned from the Alaska Department of Law that it planned to release its report on the investigation on Tuesday.
And the decision was made to wait and release the video at the same time as the report from the Office of Special Prosecutions. That way, this is the most amount of information could come out all at once.
Wright didn't know whether there would be a press conference Tuesday, but said Kissack's family will be given the opportunity to watch the footage before it is released publicly. Tuesday will mark 57 days since Kissack's death. The Anchorage Police Department recently announced a new policy that body camera footage of police shootings must be released within 45 days.
Yeah, so the time frame is pretty standard. Anchorage just implemented a policy. CPJ, we don't have an official policy, and that might be something that we need to look at.
The Juneau shooting happened on a busy downtown street in the middle of the day with dozens of witnesses. Cell phone footage taken by bystanders at the time showed various angles of the incident from a distance. According to the Alaska State Troopers and Juneau Police Department, only two of the officers involved fired their guns during the incident, Alaska Wildlife Trooper Sergeant Brandon Forst and Juneau Sergeant Chris Gifford. Gifford was previously involved in a non-fatal police shooting in 2016. The report from the Office of Special Prosecutions will include analysis of the Alaska Bureau of Investigation's findings about the incident, including whether the officer's use of force was justified. Alaska State Troopers arrested a former Soldotna Middle School custodian Thursday. That's after they say he sexually abused a student in 2013. As KDLL's Ashlyn O'Hara reports, the former school district employee was investigated twice for suspected misconduct involving other students.
52-year-old Soldotna resident Alexander Coxwell faces 3 charges of first-degree sexual abuse of a minor and 3 charges of second-degree sexual abuse of a minor. A 7th charge is still pending. According to charging documents, troopers first investigated Coxwell in 2013 after the victim mentioned their sexual relationship with Coxwell to a friend. The friend told their mother, who then contacted troopers. The investigation was dropped after the student was admitted to a residential treatment facility. No charges were brought against Coxwell. Troopers report Coxwell was investigated 2 more times after the initial investigation in 2013 for conduct involving students. Then, earlier this year, troopers received another report alleging sexual abuse by Coxwell of a different student via the State Office of Children's Services. It was while investigating that report that troopers determined the 2013 incident warranted further review. The second 2 investigations included statements from Kenai Peninsula Borough School District staff that indicated Coxwell was, quote, forced to resign. This year, the investigator contacted the student from the 2013 incident. The former student said they'd had a sexual relationship with Coxwell for over a year, between when they were 13 and 16 years old. Troopers arranged a monitored conversation between Coxwell and the former student. In a text conversation, troopers say Coxwell made numerous statements about sexual intercourse with the former student. Troopers say Coxwell also commented about videos he took of the alleged abuse that showed him supplying the former student with alcohol. Troopers arranged a sting operation Thursday at the Kenai Municipal Airport. Troopers approached Coxwell, who was holding flowers. Coxwell gave the former student's name when troopers asked who he was waiting for. According to the Alaska Court System's digital database, Coxwell was arraigned Friday morning in Kenai. As of Friday at 3:30, Coxwell was being represented by the Public Defender Agency and did not yet have another court appearance scheduled. In Kenai, I'm Ashlyn O'Hara.
Troopers believe Coxwell may have had additional victims. The agency asks anyone with relevant information to contact troopers at 907-262-4453. Again, that's 907-262-4453. Crews in Ketchikan hauled off debris over the weekend from houses destroyed in the city's deadly August 25th landslide. An evacuation order remains in effect for a handful of homes along 2nd Avenue. Cleanup efforts are also continuing above that on 3rd Avenue. State geologists declared the slopes above and below 3rd Avenue to be stable, and borough spokeswoman Casey Paxton says following the removal of debris, the critical roadway is in better condition than originally anticipated.
We are on track with restoring all services to 2nd Avenue by the 10th of September, and it's a goal to complete the slope stabilization along the slide area, both above 3rd Avenue, below 3rd Avenue, by the 13th of September, and then to complete necessary repairs to open 3rd Avenue, now this is a goal, by the 30th of September.
Paxton says the U.S. Forest Service began hydro-seeding the hillside, a process that will provide additional stabilization and protect the area from further slides. The city's Emergency Operations Center was dismantled on Friday. Paxton says it is still operating part-time, but city officials have returned to their regular posts. Many residents have expressed concern about further rain in the forecast leading to another slide. Paxton says officials will be closely monitoring areas of concern.
The most important thing is that families should be prepared, and if at any time they feel uncomfortable, there still are resources available at the Armory and Salvation Army.
Services for displaced residents have moved from Ketchikan High School to the National Guard Armory and are slated to continue until all evacuation orders are lifted. The city is also continuing to grapple with traffic concerns. The landslide cut off the 3rd Avenue bypass and left Tongass Avenue, which is currently undergoing extensive renovations by the State Department of Transportation, as the only thoroughfare on the island. The combination of ongoing tourism with schools being back in session is creating extra traffic headaches. Paxton says most cruise tour operators are working with city officials to reduce their impact on the congestion, but she says at least one tour operator's permit has been revoked by the city for leading tourists into the landslide area.
And basically it's just that. They went past the signs that were very clearly marked and took tourists into the area.
Paxton says that any tour operator that enters the restricted area around the slide will immediately lose their permit to operate in the city, and any company that attempts to drive a tour vehicle on 3rd Avenue will receive a $1,000 fine. Landslide experts are still on scene evaluating data to determine an exact cause of the landslide. Help is finally on the way for digitally stranded Sitkins. The cable-laying ship Cable Innovator departed Victoria, British Columbia en route to Sitka a little after 8 a.m. on Thursday and was expected to arrive in area waters this morning. GCI is trying to ease the pain with several perks for residents who've been cut off from the internet and other telecommunications since last Thursday. Sitka's primary internet provider is offering all customers a free month of service once service is fully restored at a later date. Residents got free admission to the Hames Center on Saturday as part of GCI's statewide 907-day promotion. Sitkins are also invited to attend the performance of the Emerge 125 Dance Group, 7 p.m. next Friday, September 13th, at the Sitka Performing Arts Center, and GCI will pick up the tab. Doors will open at 6:30 p.m., and residents will be admitted free of charge until all seats are filled. Sitka lost internet and many other telecommunications when the undersea fiber optic cable serving the community broke on August 29th. GCI says repairs could take up to 6 days. Also in Sitka, parents and teachers unhappy over the Sitka School District's decision to leave school libraries unstaffed with librarians are taking matters into their own hands. A group is organizing a library card drive to bring students into Sitka's public library system. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Beth Short Rhodes alerted the Sitka School Board to the project at its regular meeting on September 4th. Her testimony had a feeling of deja vu, as Short Rhodes was in the same chair 6 years ago, arguing against the closure of the middle school library when her daughter was in sixth grade.
Now she's a senior. She doesn't have a school library at the high school where she can check out books on a regular basis.
The district has one qualified librarian, but following unprecedented budget cuts this spring, he's been moved to the middle school and is no longer in the Sitka High Library full time. Short Rhodes believes this undermines the important role of libraries in education.
I know very well what the district is facing and the budget cuts that have come from on high. But I was told, and many other parents were told, that the Sitka High Library would be open this year and that students would be able to check out books. That has not been the case. At the beginning of the school year, students weren't able to check out books from any library in the district. That's unacceptable.
The school district's compromise has been to staff the libraries with media specialists or regular classroom teachers who receive additional training to manage libraries. In an email to KCAW, District Superintendent Deidre Jensen explained that the transition was a learning process for everyone involved and that the training for the media specialists had not yet occurred. We need to get the media specialists as well as other personnel, particularly in the high school, training as well as access to the cataloging system in order for students to check out books, Jensen wrote. We're working on that plan. In the meantime, Short Rhodes told the school board that parents were trying to turn lemons into lemonade by sponsoring a library card drive at Sitka's downtown public library with the help of teachers to recruit students.
I'm Emily Demmert, and I teach English at Sitka High School.
Emily Demmert is one of those teachers. The very next day, she escorted several of her students to the Sitka Public Library to obtain cards. Demmert says it was devastating to learn that Sitka High students would not have access to the school's library. She's clearly on the side of reading.
Most kids don't become lovers of books by just reading what's assigned in English class or history class or whatever else. They have to learn how to browse for books, think about books, make choices, reject books, get recommendations, and we talk about all of those things in my classroom.
And all those things are facilitated by a good school librarian. Demmert believes that reading is critical to growing good citizens, and libraries are critical to reading, period. Obtaining a library card is a requirement, even, in her journalism class. And now, as Sitka reckons with an extended community-wide internet outage, one of Demmert's students, Leah Herzberg, understands what this facility represents.
It's the vast knowledge that is on shelves, on high shelves, that is important about libraries.
In front of the Sitka School Board, as her 3 minutes ticked away, Short Rhodes wanted the board to see the school libraries as more than just rooms full of books.
Libraries represent the freedom to read, no matter whether you have the funds to buy a book or not. Thank you.
Short Rhodes said no student would be denied a public library card, even if no adult co-signed the application, and that there would be the additional incentive of a pizza party in October. Reporting in Sitka with help from Catherine Rose, I'm Robert Woolsey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Margaret Sutherland in Dillingham, Rhonda McBride, Chris Clinton, Adeline Baxter in Anchorage, Ben Townsend in Nome, Sage Smiley in Bethel, Ashlyn O'Hara in Kenai, Jack Darrell in Ketchikan, and Robert Woolsey in Sitka. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Tim Rocky's our producer. Thanks to Wesley Early for filling in last week. I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.